All right, we're live here at Culturally Canceled with me, Russell Peters. Today with me, it's another episode. We don't do these very often where it's just me and one person. Usually it's me and a couple of people, but this time I feel blessed to have this gentleman across from me because we met a few years ago, about almost 7-8 years ago, I guess now, and we always texted each other, which was always good. I didn't think when he first gave me his number and I texted him, I didn't think he was going to reply. I thought, or he'd be like, "Nah, I don't remember who this is." Because that happens in this fucking business all the time. But I've been a fan of this guy for a very, very long time. And then the more people I say his name to, the more people go, "Holy shit, I love that guy. He's fucking awesome." Anyway, Clifton Collins Jr. is sitting across from me right now.
Thanks for having
me,
brother.
What up, Clifton?
Thanks for having me, brother.
I know. He's the most Mexican-looking guy with a black guy's name. and an Irish last name, which makes no sense because apparently your dad's German.
Yeah, completely. I know. For a long time, it's sloppy.
And then, by the way, Piper the dog is here, and she's being a fucking brat because she dropped her toy, and she's whining because she wants somebody to pick up her toy for her. You lazy bitch.
Or one could argue it's just a commentary.
It is.
A little pug commentary.
Yeah, she's like, somebody play with me. So here's what I was trying to tell you before we came on the air, Cliff.
Yes, sir.
So when I first met you, and even before I met you, I would see you in movies, obviously. I always thought that you were Little Puppet from American Me.
Danny De La Paz?
Yeah. And even when I look at you now, I still think, it's Puppet, right? Or Little Puppet. Well, that's got to be one. He's one of them. You know him, though, right?
I do.
Do you guys look alike, or is it my imagination?
That's your imagination.
Wow.
But you got a vivid imagination. That's good.
Yeah,
that's
or good. Was it Little Puppet, then? It must have been Little Puppet. Because Puppet didn't look like you, but Little Puppet is brother, the one that they killed. You know, I think of...
Don't look at me, Little Puppet. Don't look at me when he's coming.
Look away. Look away.
You know how you do when you're killing your brother.
Yeah. The old kill your brother scenario. Yeah,
you don't want to make eye contact. It's just creepy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I just thought you got thinner. You know what I mean? I thought, like, when I look at that, I thought you got thinner over the years, and that's where you were just had a chubby phase or something, you know?
Oh, that's Danny Villarreal.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a throwback, brother. God, that's 94? 1994?
Was it 90? Was that?
Yeah, it was earlier. Jacob Vargas was in that, too. He was young in that. He was probably 22 or 23.
And the Japanese guy was in it. What's his name?
Oh, I forget his name. Yeah, that's, there's a lot of heavy issues with that film.
It was a great movie, but it caused problems for them.
Yeah.
And a lot of people had to get them out of those problems.
Yeah, and some didn't make it.
Yeah, well, you know. Didn't Danny get them out of some of the problems?
I don't know.
I heard Danny made a call to, like, listen, to really smooth it over. He didn't, like, get him out. He was just like, listen, let me just explain on this guy's behalf. He didn't, you know.
You get a phone call from the Bay, you got to pay attention.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's true, for sure.
Yeah.
There's a reason there was no.
I'd get collect calls from the Bay, but those were my friends.
Yeah, that's how that goes. Hey, can you put some money in my commissary?
I love doing that for my friends, though. Send them some shoes or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, because they, you know, and then they brag about it.
Do they?
My friend, he's an actor. He gave me these.
Oh, wow. Well, whatever. if it helps.
Then they go, put on this movie. He's in it. Put on this movie. He's in it. He's in this movie. Yeah, put on Encino Man.
I did drop to 143, though, but that's not when you knew me. When you knew me, I was more like 160.
You're not like a big guy to begin with. Like, you have a small face. So no matter what you do, you'll always look thin. I have, my face is the first thing to get fat on me.
Is it?
Yeah. And like, so I could drop weight on my body. My face will still be like puffy. And I'm like, what? I'm not even drinking anymore. What are you doing? Why am I still puffy?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it sucks.
I get it on my belly.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather have it there than on my fucking face. Cause then at least you can just do a headshot and still look good.
You know? Wear a big jacket.
Yeah, wear a big jacket. Wear some baggy clothes.
Yeah, baggy clothes is the way.
What are you working on right now?
Right now, I'm writing my grandfather's life story.
Pedro?
Yes, sir.
Tell us about him.
It's an origin story, starting at his birth, 1925, all the way until his discovery on the Groucho Marx show, the You Bet Your Life show.
Oh, wow. My dad was born in 1925.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, brother. That's dope. Yeah, so it's taken me down some rabbit holes. I've traced my family lineage to the Carpas of the 1900s. my theater background, going back to the 1839 Spain.
So this is genetic for you. This isn't really a choice.
Apparently.
Yeah, it's like kind of like, literally, it's like, you know, your grandfather was a, you know, I knew his name.
Contract player for John Wayne.
That's crazy, right?
Didn't even read.
Yeah, Pedro Gonzalez.
Yeah, he started to perform when he was 6 years old.
Well, he was a dancer too, though.
The tap dancer, hoofer, jitterbug, Charleston, a comedian. You know, he would quickly become the headliners of these. You know, carpas were like the traveling vaudevillian shows of the day. Yeah. You'd do like four or five performances and you move on to the next town. So a lot of the families, it would be a family affair.
You still see them.
Yeah.
You still see them. I went to one. There's like the Vargas one. The Vargas family circus, you see, and you know, it's like, yeah, everybody's related.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's no shortage of Mexicans in a family.
This is true.
I mean, shit, my son is half Mexican, so I mean, I get it.
How did that happen?
Yeah, well, you know, I fucked up, but. So, oh, that's him. Look at him.
Yeah, there he is. Yeah.
You don't look actually anything like him. Oh, there you go. There you go. You got the eyes.
Yeah, I get a lot. I remember
the eyes and the nose.
Eddie spoke at my grandpa's funeral, and he was like, "Clifton, you gotta do play him in a movie."
That would be dope.
I mean, I'm writing it now, so it's I got a 150 page script. My next draft, I'm gonna be bringing it down. But Guillermo del Toro sent me on my journey when I was doing a Nightmare Alley in Toronto, and one night we were having a little wine and cheese with his girlfriend, and. Like dinner was finished, like, you know, Ron Perlman had just left and Willem Dafoe and Tony Collette. It was just the three of us. And they wanted to watch a trailer to Jockey. So I showed them the trailer and he's like, "It's Guillermo del Toro, man. He's like our Hitchcock." So he's sitting there and he's like, "Ah, cabrón." And he likes to call me Clifferton. He goes, "Clifferton, mira, cabrón." He goes, "I want to tell you something." I'm like, "What?" He goes, "Look, you and your grandpa and your great grandmother and all the history of the carpas and this and that." He goes, you're the Latino Barrymores, cabrón."
You kind of are.
And
yeah,
I was
you
like,
are.
No, Guillermo, come on, please.
Does that make you Drew?
What's that? That's what I was thinking. It would make me Drew because I'm not Lionel. I'm not, you know. Because
your grandfather's
back.
John.
Yeah, I don't know.
Your grandfather's John Barrymore.
There's even the mother, John's mom was in vaudeville.
Yeah.
So I was like, no. I just, it's hard to accept those kind of praises from somebody you revere and look up to so much, like Guillermo. You know, it's really hard. So I was like, I said, "No, Guillermo, no." And then he like looked at me real serious and he leaned forward and he goes, "Yes, you are." I said, "Okay, I am."
Guillermo del Toro was Mexican Spanish?
Mexican.
I always thought he was from Spain for some reason. I don't know why. Is Benicio and him related?
No.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But a lot of people, when I say Guillermo, they think I mean Benicio and vice versa. And if they're not.
Benicio's not Mexican, though.
No.
He's Spanish.
He's a Puerto Rican.
Is he Puerto Rican? Really?
Mm-hmm. It's not his fault.
No, I mean, you can't have everything. I never knew Benicio del Toro was Puerto Rican. He didn't look Puerto Rican. He looks...
He's got to be a mix of stuff. I haven't spoken to him in a while.
He's very brown. Really? Huh.
It's good to have a fact checker.
Yeah, though we got Eddie and Paulie over there.
Eddie's not fact checking.
Okay. Oh, yeah. He's only fucking 3 years older than us.
Is he really? I texted him when he turned 50.
So 3 years ago. 5 years ago.
Yeah. I don't think he was happy about it.
No?
I was like, "Happy birthday, you old fucker."
I mean.
50. I just turned 51.
Yeah. I'm turning 51 in a month. So
wow.
Yeah, I get it. We're the same age.
Yeah.
You were a brat. And Michael Jai White was the one that told me yesterday. He goes, "You know, Clifton Collins is a really fucking talented tap dancer." I said, "What?" I said, "How do you know that?" He goes, "It's common knowledge." I go, I didn't know this. I never even heard that.
I wouldn't
associate you with tap dancing. How does this even happen?
My grandpa got us tapping when we were 7 years old. Mm-hmm. Like Arthur Duncan would come over, like from the Lawrence Welk show.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd sit there with me and my cousin and show us routines. My aunt was a dancer. Obviously, my grandfather was a hover. And my grandfather, I got footage of him doing like breakdance moves on the Jimmy Durante show.
Well, yeah, there was those. Oh, there's a lot of old footage, because I was a B-boy back in the day.
Okay, you were?
Yeah, so there was a lot. There's a lot of footage from like the 30s and 40s of people doing these moves, and you're like, what the fuck was that? And they go, that's a breakdancing move now. But back then it was like part of, you know, the jitterbug or whatever it was they were doing at the moment, you know, and it was just a hard move to do.
Well, when I actually got my hands on the Jimmy Durante show that he did with Robert Mitchum.
Wow.
Yeah. And
see, these are all like fucking insanely legendary names. It's not like, you know, my dad, my grandfather, you know, when he met, you know, there was a day player and a spaghetti Western, you know, these are like, these are big, big names.
You know, and as a kid growing up, I, you know, you hear Robert Mitchum, but I was more impressed with the fact that he knew Daffy Duck and that he knew Speedy Gonzalez and that because he did three cartoons.
He knew Mel Blanc.
Mel Blanc loved him.
Here's the funny thing. The last podcast I did before this was with this guy named Eric Baza, who's a Filipino kid from Toronto, who is now the voice of all the characters in Looney Tunes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, because his son did him for a little while.
Yeah, Mel Blanc, and then his, what's his son's name?
Mel Jr.?
No, I don't think it was.
I can't remember.
It's like Harvey Blank or Henry Blank or something. I've
met him.
I'm drawing
times.
A blank right now.
Same. I'm drawing a big blank.
Noel? No, Noel is fucking Eric Bauza's son, I think.
No.
Oh, Noel? So yeah. Noel then.
Yeah, so
Noel.
So Gramps used to tell me this story that Mitchum would be pretty wasted at rehearsals, you know? So so they'd be rehearsing and stuff, and he was supposed to learn this Spanish song to sing while he's on a hammock because it was very Mexican-themed.
Right.
And my grandfather got to do a lot of his routine playing the frying pans and stuff. And Bobby was so messed up, he didn't know the words or anything. So my grandpa told me this story when I was a kid that he goes, a big old flower pot. So I just went behind it, and I hid right behind it, and I'd sing the song to him. And then Bobby would just repeat the lyrics, and he'd sing, sing it the way he'd sing it. And I was like, so I heard this story forever. And then when my grandpa got sick with cancer, I think the performance, I believe, was February 11th, 1956. So I went to the Beverly Hills Museum of Radio and Science Television, and they knew my grandfather was sick. So they said, we would really love it if your grandpa was able to see this. Could he come in? I said, I would love it if he saw it too. He's got his chemo pack and all this. I don't think I could get him here. So, well, you know, we're going to do a special thing. And they went out of their way, got in touch with the people in New York, sent me a copy within 4 days, and I got to watch it with them for the very first time.
And he'd never seen it.
He'd never actually seen the footage.
Wow.
He's like, Mijo, you showing this to me was like you never having seen Capote and then seeing it 50 years later. Because almost 50 years later to the day, because he died shortly thereafter.
Yeah. How old was he when he passed?
God, I couldn't even tell you.
How long ago was it?
06.
Okay, so he was 81. He was 80.
Okay.
Because my dad passed in 04, and he was 78, and they're the same age. So.
Okay.
Yeah, he would have been 80.
Yeah. So we're watching it, and then sure enough, there goes the hammock scene. He goes, Mijo, right there, there's the flower pot. I'm hiding right behind that.
Wow.
So to put that together as a kid and then be in my like late 30s, you know, and finally, it was just such a beautiful, magical bookend.
I tend to, when I go on YouTube, I watch a lot of the stuff that I saw when I was a kid in the 70s. And to try and re-understand it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? To really appreciate what I was looking at. So I watch a lot of old Carson interviews and stuff, and I realize what a fucking dope time that was.
Carson, I watched a Groucho interview not that long ago when he was older.
Yeah.
And the reporter asked him if he thought the world was funny. And Groucho had told him, no, I don't think the world is funny. In fact, the world is filled with pain. And it made me think because, as you know, a tragedy plus passage of time equals comedy. Mm-hmm. And it made me realize that he was coming to terms with his own mortality and realizing that he doesn't have enough time to process all the stuff he's really hyper aware with of.
I loved Groucho.
Groucho, I mean.
I love the Marx Brothers.
Have you seen the episode of my grandfather and Groucho on the You Bet Your
No. Life? Eddie, pull that up.
Oh, Lord.
Groucho Marx, You Bet Your Life with Pedro Gonzalez.
They would remain friends to the very end.
Yeah, like Groucho, I would watch like Duck Soup and all that stuff.
I watched it recently.
What was the Feathers one? What was the There was a Feathers movie called. They had a movie called something with feathers in it.
Yeah, their uncle helped them because their mom, you know, because Groucho was fairly, he left, he was out of school by the age of 14.
Yeah, that's like kind of normal back then.
It kind of was.
Especially people in the entertainment business.
Yeah, but they would do not so great.
Plymouth dealers.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
From coast to coast, in every state in the union.
Like watching this now, present, even you're like, this is so fucking dope just to see.
Groucho Marx. It's just so, it's so retro.
It seems retro, but still seems like when you really think about it, like we're all part of the same wave of the same thing. Because it didn't exist when they were kids.
9 years.
Wait, what did he say?
9 years.
Horse fingers.
I'm afraid to ask his next question.
You gotta see the dance he does. He just does a quick little dance for him.
Was your wife named Gonzalez before you married her?
No.
Oh. How did you meet Mrs. Gonzalez?
Well, she was working in San Antonio in an old theater. She was a dancer. And I have a friend, and then he took me to her in backstage. And then she gave me a good look, and I give her another good look. And that was going on.
That's his real voice?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of a look did you give this girl when you met her backstage? Could you give us a sample look, Pedro?
Well, I just... Can I look at her?
Did you guys have the same eyes, nose, and mouth?
Would you mind if Pedro
looked
crazy.
At you? That's
crazy. See? Give it a look.
Will this make sense when they watch this on the show? Yeah, and YouTube. Well, the audio of this right now is going to suck.
Does this have any effect on you at all, Sally?
I look back.
Back to your grandmother.
Well, I'm talking curious about your courtship, Pedro. Didn't her mother object because her daughter was so young?
That's just another contestant.
Well, she objected sometimes, you know. I remember one time I went to see my girlfriend. I took her a serenade.
You took her a serenade?
Yeah, like I saw in the movie, they take serenade. So I took a serenade to her. And then I had my guitar and I started singing as a song. When I was singing the song, I saw the window open. And I thought it was my girlfriend who wanted to give me a nice, good, nice kiss. Good
and she's
night.
Upstairs and you're downstairs?
Yes, sir.
Well, how could she kiss you if she was upstairs and you were down?
Well, I think I can climb up.
And then what
year was
you.
This?
She could have climbed
1953.
Down,
oh, wow, so your grandfather
opened,
was 28 years
and
old
I
here.
I thought it was my
27.
Girlfriend.
27, yeah.
Her mother, and she threw me a pail of water.
That's crazy, right?
Yeah, they got married. He was 17 and she was 15.
Wow.
She threw a pail of water on you?
Yeah.
What were you singing? Kiss of Fire? What were you singing? Do you remember?
So
well,
watch.
I was singing the Rancho
that's
Grande.
Where he sings his...
Well, could you give us a little of it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, ya en el Rancho Grande. You want it in English or in...
Was he meaning to be this funny?
He's just naturally off the cuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Because he's playing it so deadpan.
Oh, what would you call that, what you just did?
Rancho Grande.
I mean. Would you call that English or Spanish?
Well, I think I call it English.
You do it in English, huh?
In English?
Yeah.
Over there in the big range, I have a beautiful...
no wonder you got the water.
And I dance, too.
You do, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, could you do a little dance for us?
Sure, why
check
not?
This out.
What kind of dances do you do? You come over here, Sally, yeah? Oh. And you go over there and dance, huh?
You want me to dance?
Yeah.
What do you want me to dance? I dance the Jarabe Tapatio, I dance La Bamba, I dance Little Mambo, and I dance, you know.
Well, do something that you do very well.
Okay. Well, when I dance, I just dance La Jarabe Tapatio.
That was a breakdancing move. That. That became a breakdancing move.
Yeah?
They added that into top rocking when you would top rock. You would have that little stomp with the leg pull.
Okay, okay. So, radio between 1935 and 1945 was your predominant form of entertainment at home.
Right,
you
exactly.
You could buy it for $7 all the way up to like 5,000 radios back then. So they had a radio version of this, which I also have.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually sings a longer version of the song. And he really gets into the Spanish version of it.
Right.
And then he's like, and he knows, he's totally playing it like he's playing it deadpan. He's
yeah.
like, what's the matter? Don't we have a band here? And then Groucho laughs like, ha ha. He goes, hit it, boys. And then the band just like, dump, dump, dump. And then he goes, he just starts wailing. And that was the radio version. But they cut it for television. Groucho went over on this show. Like there was a time limit where they were supposed to stop. And he just let it go because he was laughing so hard. And he didn't care. He told NBC, just let him go.
And it was live then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the crazy part.
Yeah.
Like they weren't, nobody was a slave to anything back then. Yet they were all still slaves to it.
Yes.
Like nobody, like they all had the ability to do, like they were kind of more in control than the studios were back then. But then the studios would lock you into these crazy fucking deals and stuff, you know?
For sure, which would happen later. But for this particularly, he was really, he almost didn't go to this because when Walter O'Keefe called Groucho to let him know that he found this guy that could help him with his ratings, he was like, okay, cool. Well, can I bring my act? You want me to do my frying pans, my dancing, my routines? What do you want to do? He goes, no, you're just going to answer some questions. He goes, answer questions. I barely speak English. You just heard all the words I know.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, it'll be easy. You're going to answer questions. So he tells my grandma, he's like, I don't think I'm going to go. I just, this is embarrassing. Like, I can't bring my act. I'm like, I'm handcuffed.
Yeah.
I can't be funny. I'm going to look like an ass. And everybody knows how good of a performer I am. I can't read. You know, I can't do these things. So he's like, well, we need money. We need this. We need that. Why don't you just go? He's like, so he takes his plane ticket. He's never flown before.
Where was he?
San Antonio.
Oh, okay. And then he came to LA.
He cashes it in for a bus ticket.
Wow.
He leaves early, takes the RTD. He lands at the RTD in Hollywood,
right,
which is in the original A Star Is Born. When that actress comes off, that's the same bus station. And then he walks to NBC, which used to be on the corner there where that bank is on Sunset and Coinga.
Oh, yeah.
Which is where actually he would have had to have walked past where his star is now.
Wow.
That me and Sam Jackson got.
That's wild, right?
It's really surreal. I told Sam when we got his star, I was like, Sam, my grandpa landed at that bus station. He had to walk past us to get to, that's where NBC used to be. And it was just a trippy moment.
Yeah.
So when he gets to NBC, the guy at the gate's like, oh, you're here for the janitorial position.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And grandpa's like, oh, no, but I can help you. I'm here to see Mr. White. Here's the letter. And then he shows him the letter. He goes, oh, my God. And he realized he's meeting Mr. White, like the big producer. Like, oh, Mr. Gonzalez. Like, oh, no big deal. So he goes, just go in there and go to left and da-da-da-da. And he's like, so he goes in. He's completely blown away. He's really scared of being unfunny, untalented. He's going down these hallways and there's people rehearsing in different studios. And this one studio is open. These two doors are open. And there's these whole people dancing. It stops. And my grandpa walks and he's, oh, excuse me. Could I get a little help? And this sweaty woman turns around. Like, oh, wow. Look at this guy. He must be a big shot coming in here. Oh yeah. What's so big? What do you need? What's the big story here? He goes, oh, I want to try to get to studio 3 or here. Because he couldn't read.
Right.
So he shows it to her. He goes, what? He goes, it says da 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 da. And he grabs her. She grabs him. And he wore, you know, he's like a $140 wet, you know, mm-hmm. and throws him. And that was Judy Garland.
Wow.
And
this
then,
bitch.
And then and then a year later, I've got the Western Union letter from Jack Warner. I've got about like 8 Western Union letters from Jack Warner. And it's inviting him to the Star Is Born for Judy Garland. And my grandfather and Natalie Wood introduced the film at the Pendages Theater.
Wow.
So
did your grandfather smash Natalie Wood too?
I would have loved, he would have never told me.
What was that actor?
Was hot, though.
Yeah, I was friends with, what was his name? When I moved to Malibu, I became friends with the old guy. He passed away last year. No.
Oh, I loved Forrester.
Not Robert Forrester, the knock the battery off my shoulder guy.
Oh, Conrad.
Yeah, Conrad. Oh, Robert Conrad. Yeah.
I love Conrad.
I would have lunch with Bobby Conrad at this restaurant out there when I lived in Malibu. And he was like, yeah, fuck Natalie Wood. I'm like, what?
Whoa.
He would tell me about it. I was like, yeah. I got some good pussy back in the day. I was like, all right, well, you already won up my entire life with Natalie Wood. I mean, you know.
Man.
And then he was like, everybody fucked Natalie Wood. I was like, holy shit.
My grandpa shared some stories.
Yeah.
Well, because he was a contract player with Dennis Hopper, a James Dean, Nick Adams.
Yeah, these are not minor Alfalfa. Names. Yeah. Alfalfa.
Alfalfa, and that was a nickname that he carried, even though he was from the Little Rascals.
Yeah.
Well,
that was the Little Rascals Alfalfa.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Didn't he kill himself?
No, he got killed over gambling debt. He went to the guy's house to either collect or pay or something, and the guy shot him.
Yes, I did hear this story.
Yeah, but they were all friends. So I heard a lot of stories. I was friends with Dennis Hopper since 91.
That's crazy, right?
I got pictures of Grandpa and him. And he was friends. He was with Dean when Dean was at the Pier D'Angi wedding, crying. And he got on his motorcycle and took off. And my grandpa was trying to console him. These all kinds of these stories I grew up with.
I have a friend. He would have been great on this with us. My buddy Clay Roberts. His dad was Ben Roberts. Ben Roberts wrote all the Jimmy Cagney movies.
Oh, wow.
And then he created Charlie's Angels, Ironside, okay. Mannix, Mission Impossible.
Wow.
So my buddy Clay, he's only a couple of years old. He's the same age as us, basically.
Okay.
And so he always tells me these wild stories. And I'm like to hear like, the, you know, like, because, you know, they're real.
Yeah.
And nobody's just doing it to drop names. They're just, these just happen to be the fucking names.
I'll show you a photo. I got a photo of a Dennis Hopper, my grandpa, and Pat Wayne in a bar in Tijuana when they were filming.
Pat Wayne, John Wayne's brother?
Son.
Son, right.
Yeah. Mike Wayne was the eldest, and then Pat Wayne, who at the time was at Loyola Marymount studying to become a priest. But he didn't.
Yeah. No, that never works out.
Yeah. So, but Bob Conrad, though, I did a picture with him back in, I did a talkie with him, see, back in 96. No,
those were the 92. Movies that my buddy Clay's dad wrote.
Oh, I love those films.
And he was like, he would write those and he'd be like, what's a good line here? You'll never get away with it, copper, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
See?
Yeah.
The cadence of the era is pretty awesome. I love that whole lingo. But I did so right before I wrapped this thing that I was doing with Conrad, I got one of the prop masters to give me a D-sized Duracell battery. So I took a picture. I said, Bob, come on, let's take a pic. He's like, all right. And, you know, he's a petite guy.
Yeah, he was so frail.
I put it on his shoulder like that, and he never knew about it. So I've got the pic at home.
Oh, that's awesome.
I might have it on my phone, actually. I'll pull it up later.
These are the great moments that you get in your life. And well,
when I did the research, when I went back to look at the commercial, it wasn't a Duracell battery. It was a different battery. But who cares?
Well, what was it? What was the battery, Paulie? You're old.
I think
tell
it's
us.
The one with the cats. Ever-ready?
I remember the. No, it wasn't Ever-ready. I remember the ones with the cats on it. What were they called? Was Ever-ready the cats?
We're dating ourselves.
Hey, Puck, what was the battery that had the cats on it? You know what I'm talking about? It was silver.
He's like, I dare you, knock it off my shoulder.
Ever-ready. It was Ever-ready, yeah.
Remember those?
Yeah.
They'd always fuck up the toys.
Find Robert Conrad battery
commercial
pick or commercial. Yeah.
And did you ever see that blooper? Because I know he was kind of difficult with Cruz when he was younger, but they threw a pie in his face on one of those commercials. Yeah. I don't know if you ever saw that.
No, he was still that guy even when in his twilight. He was still telling me, "I'll fucking fight you, boy."
There he is. Look at Bob.
Wow, alkaline. He looked nothing like that when I knew him.
Yeah, no.
He looked like a ghost. Eyes were sunken in. It was after he had that car accident too, so
okay.
He wasn't walking properly. And he came to my house one time, and I don't know if we got him drunk or not. And then I dropped him home, and then he made me come and hang out at his house with him. And,
made you? Well, yeah, okay, you fine. Know, I'll go, Bob.
Well, no, you know what it is. You know, you feel bad because you actually find out that the guy's kind of lonely, and he's like, "Hey, you want to come in?" And you're like, yeah, I'll come in, Bob. Yeah, I'll come in. And you feel bad because the house is really nice. And he was like, just trying to get my wife back. And I bought this house hoping, you know, and I'm like, Jesus, this sucks, man.
Yeah, that's
because, you know, underneath all the rough exterior, he was just a regular sweet guy.
For sure.
Which is most of the tough guys that you ever meet. They're always these sweet guys underneath.
Yeah, I'm learning that. I'm learning that. Life's a funny thing when you get older. Your values change. Your filters change. You grow. You evolve. You know, you get more empathetic and your capacity for empathy grows. Hopefully, if you're a good person.
Yeah, I mean,
good human.
I mean, see, like, when I see guys like you in movies, because you're so fucking good at it, I always sit there and I go, could I have ever done that role? No, I don't have the fucking, I don't have the ability to control my face the way you do. Like, what I'm saying is, when I see you in a role, your entire being is that role.
Thank you, man.
So when I see myself doing something, I can always see, I'm like, I fucking drifted off. I look at it and I go, I fucking not even paying attention. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, I'm not present. It's just, I could see it. I could see all the things I'm doing wrong when I watch myself.
Oh, man.
When it comes to acting, especially. Like, stand up, I know how to do like the back of my head.
I would love to. I've got a lot of friends that call me for coaching.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I never have a role good enough to get coached for.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, if I had a role that would be good enough to get coached for, I'd be like, Clifton, can you help me with this?
You call me. In some of the youngsters that I mentored, like some of the people that I worked with that were kids are now like grown-ass men that will call me. They know, don't call me for a guest spot.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to spend 4 hours with you on a guest spot. But if you got a role that'll move the needle on the record, you call me. I'll be there for you.
Yeah.
I don't charge them nothing. And we're going to grind this bitch out till
you're bleeding out of your eyeballs. You know tricks to this.
Well, you study so much, you get past the tricks.
Right.
You can start with tricks. If you don't have a lot of time to prep, you fall back on some of the tricks that don't look like tricks.
Yeah.
But if you get the right proper time to prepare, you get in, you get past the tricks, and you make that shit real. And that's when the face changes and those things happen. But that originally started with me as a result of not feeling worthy of a role as Clifton.
Right.
Like, I'm not right for this role, and I'm glad I got this audition, but I can bring somebody for you that is right. And that would be the character I created. Right. So I will hide behind this mask. I said, that guy is better for this role than I am.
Well, but that's the thing. That's where I can't get to.
Because you love yourself.
I don't know what it is. I just, you know what it is? I trust my own self. And I don't know if I trust the commitment I can get to be that.
Interesting. And that comes with prep.
Yeah. And I also don't prepare well.
I would love to help you prep.
Yeah, I don't prepare well.
So
that's my manager talking.
That was a voice in the clouds. That was God speaking.
He's not lying. I mean, I would dispute it if I thought he was wrong, but he's definitely not wrong.
I would love to help you on that because I will give you a filter that you will carry with you for the rest of your life. You might not even have to call me unless it's just to hang. Thank you, brother.
Flip the top.
Whoa.
That's a blowtorch.
That's a friggin' damn cigar lightsaber.
Yeah. You're not married, are you?
Thankfully, no.
Yeah. No kids?
No.
Yeah.
Not yet. I'm sure they'll come knocking down.
It's not worth it.
You're my dad.
Get that Academy Award. You'll find how many kids you got.
There's a line of people. You kind of look like me. You kind of look. Yeah, they're all going to be in mixed races.
Yeah. Well, you got to spread it around.
Black part, Mexican part, Puerto Rican. Yeah.
Yeah, I got those.
Equal opportunity.
Yeah. My son's Mexican and Honduran, and my daughter's Ecuadorian and Honduran.
Oh, wow.
And then my lady, she's Filipina.
Okay.
And her daughters are black and Filipino.
Okay.
So I'm kind of covering my bases here.
Next on the list, you'll have a part Filipino child.
No, we're both too old for that now. That's the good news. And that could go sour. That could go south bad. I mean, you're gambling with those two looks. I mean, what if they look kind of Filipino, but they get my nose? You know what I mean? That's awful. That's an awful deal for any human being.
It worked for Durante.
Yeah, in the 30s and 40s. And he had a fat nose.
Duly noted.
Duly nosed.
Duly nosed. Yeah, Grandpa was fond of, as you know, there could be a lot of professional jealousy with these comedians. And that was one of the warnings that Grandpa always would tell me, because he had, you know, Groucho was one of the few that really pushed him to be great, as did Durante.
Groucho, let me tell you, I fucking love Groucho.
Yeah.
Like, I watched those movies just for Groucho scenes. I didn't like Harpo, and I didn't like
Chico. Chico just wanted to be a piano bar player. That's what he aspired to.
Harpo was the quiet one, right?
He was the quiet one, and he took up the harp because he just wanted to have something to do.
Yeah, but he always had the horn.
Yeah, he came up with that stuff because they you know, when they would come up in vaudeville, they would get fired from every show they got hired. So the mom, as the manager, had to rename the group every time. Oh, here's the new group I have. And it was the same brothers.
Yeah.
And then one of their uncles was like, who's kind of a semi-successful playwright.
Was Marx their real last name?
No. What's Groucho? Oh, he's got a cool ass name. He's got a cool first name, too.
What's Groucho Marx's real name, Eddie?
I'm totally blanking right now. It's a really dope name.
Julius Henry Marx. Oh, Marx wasn't a real last name.
Julius. And his parents were immigrants. And his parents married when they were young.
Really? Where was him? Where was his parents from?
I think his mom came when she was 14. She came over to...
Was he Jewish?
I can't remember.
Because Julius Henry's...
They came from Northern Germany, but his mother did when she was
16. 16 and Pops?
Well, yeah, see, that Dick Cavett interview I just happened to watch recently.
Oh, wow.
On YouTube.
Wait, is that the one where he says it's not funny? The world's not funny?
Yeah, I think that is the one because Dick Cavett's
got some good ones.
I watched Carson and I watched Dick Cavett interviews.
Oh, wow.
And those are my favorites.
Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin.
Because Cavett was, I didn't even know how Cavett just got in with everybody like that. Because he was kind of annoying.
He was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was no Letterman.
No, but he would try to be funnier than the guest. You're like, don't. And, just let them do their thing.
And shit would always fall flat on its face.
Yeah.
The black.
Well,
And sometimes slightly condescending. Just slightly.
Yeah, he had that tone, that's why.
A little condescending.
I heard him and Eddie Murphy became really good friends.
Really?
Yeah. Eddie Murphy, yeah. Dick Cavett's still alive? How old is he now?
105.
84.
Well, that's not too bad.
He's not that bad.
Yeah.
He looked young for his age even back then.
How old was he back then?
I mean, he was around in the 80s too. I mean, what? So he must have been he couldn't have been that old. You're right. He was young then.
Yeah. I love watching them old shows though. And lately I've been doing that. I mean, starting with Guillermo's Nightmare Alley to do the research, I got into the noir films.
Right.
So that was fun. And then getting into writing Grandpa's story, it just helped to round the world. But, you know, as you noticed in the Groucho show, when he says, what kind of look did you give her? He asks permission. Can I look at her?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jim Crow. The Jim Crow.
Oh,
era.
Yeah.
Grandpa and Grandma went through the stuff that I've learned, the dark stuff, from lynchings to my grandpa almost got lynched.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's very similar to what happened to Indian people. My parents are from India. But when I was in South Africa doing shows, and I was spending a lot of time there. At one point, I'll wait for that helicopter to go by or that plane, whatever it was. Harrison Ford taking his shit out again. It was an older Indian man, because there's a lot of Indians in South Africa. They were brought there as indentured labor. And he was telling me that during apartheid, he got the shit beat out of him by the police because he used to sell ice cream on the beach. And they would call him Coolie. They'd be like, Coolie man, come here, bring the ice cream. The white people would call him Coolie. It's just like saying, if you saw a Mexican, hey, Beaner, come here. I want to talk to you. And so it's basically they're being very derogatory to you. So he's like, you weren't allowed to look at white women. So he would keep his sunglasses on so that they couldn't see his eyes. And they'd be like, yes, ma'am. And she'd be like, give me blah, blah, blah. And he would reach in and hand it down to them. Mm-hmm. And said, this one lady handed him the money and he dropped it. And so he looked down to see where it fell. And she's like, are you looking at me?
Oh, wow.
And she called the cops and the cops beat him within an inch of his life, he said.
Yeah.
He said it was really fucking bad back then. So I fully understand that whole Jim Crow era stuff. And so when you say your grandfather asked, I get it. It makes complete sense to me.
Yeah. I think people forget what the tone was. Because there was a lot of things that were at that time socially accepted and not considered racist because it was just the time. But today, if you were to actually know what people were actually saying and meaning, you'd be like, oh my God, this is so racist and insensitive.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, there's we've gone too far the other way now. We've gone too far the other way where now everything is racist. And I'm talking about it in my act because I'm like, you know, you can't negate color and size and gender when you're describing something. Otherwise, you're not going to get the colors to the picture I'm painting right now, you know. I'm going to be like, I'm like, if I tell you, here's my impression of a really woke person telling a story. So I saw a human today and they did this thing. Isn't that funny? You're like, no, because I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
I think if there wasn't,
that's the, Kangol Kid, by the way. Remember UTFO? Roxanne, Roxanne.
Oh yeah,
that's him.
That was, that's dope.
That's his little baby.
Oh man, that's I mean, that's our
generation.
That's our soundtrack.
Hi, baby. How are you? Can I hug you? Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Grandma.
Happy birthday.
She had her birthday. What? You're not? You're not. You're turning into an auntie because your sister Daisy's pregnant.
Turning into.
And Kangol, that's Clifton.
How you doing? You know, good to meet you, brother.
You know who that is,
fan,
right?
Brother, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, well, you've never watched a movie in your life?
I've never watched a movie.
Yeah, you know exactly what it is. When you see him, and you go, "Oh my God, yes!" He's every movie. You're gonna be like, "Oh my God, I can't believe I was sitting with that guy."
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, if you remember the title to the gay porn, I mean,
yeah.
The hustling days.
Yeah. When you make money, we got to make money. We did it for the paycheck. You got to, you know, you want to act, so you got to take whatever work. Stallone fell into that trap, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He did. I think that's why I do so many indies. But, you know, at least with the indies, you get that creative fulfillment.
Hey, you got to do both Boondocks.
Both, part two, I did.
You weren't in part one?
I was not. I was around for part one. I was friends with Troy from the beginning.
Because you're listed on IMDb as Boondock Saints 1.
Really?
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Yeah, no, I wasn't at all. I was home when they took off. I remember doing a send-off. We had a big party at my house. They got shit plowed. That was, you know, when you're younger, you can drink.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because I'm like, I try to have a drink now, and I'm like, I don't like it anymore.
Same.
I'm like, I want to have a drink. I'm like, tonight seems like the right night to have a drink. And I'm like, have it. And I go, nah.
My bar stays full. It's just full.
Yeah, mine's like right there.
Somebody wants to go ahead, drink whatever you want. I don't even care.
Yeah.
It's some special bottles, some old bottles. I'm like, I'm not going to taste it.
I'll taste it, but I'm like, I'm afraid of my reflux acting up, number one. Then number two, I'm afraid I'm going to need a lot of it to get me buzzed.
I don't think you would.
No, I would. I would need a lot to get me buzzed. And then I'm not sure if I'm buzzed or if I'm just feeling sick from it or dizzy. You know what I mean?
Wow. I got smart early. I would do one drink and then one water. I started that when I was young. My dad was an alcoholic. So I've had less than 10 hangovers in my entire life.
I've had a few.
Less than 10.
I didn't start drinking until I was 31.
Yeah, I didn't. I was never really a big drinker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a half Mexican guy, that's quite a feat.
Well, actually, you know what? My entertainment side of my family, the Mexican side, doesn't drink. My grandfather never drank.
Really?
Well, he rarely drank. Actually, my uncle told me not that long ago, the only time he saw my grandfather drunk was when he had to pick him up from the airport and he was flying back from doing a charity event for cerebral palsy. And he found out that Groucho had passed.
Oh, wow.
And that was like his mentor. So yeah. That was the only time you saw him drunk.
That's actually the only time I won't drink is when I'm upset. I will only drink when I'm in a good mood. Just because it amplifies whatever mood you're in.
I did drink once when I was depressed. Because I was like, this is what I see in the movies. And just, let me just try it one time.
Always the wrong move.
It was good to do it once. Literally.
Get that out of the way, you know?
And I did. Never did it again. Because it just, like you said, it just didn't really work. So the indies, I got Jockey now.
What is Jockey?
Jockey is it's like the wrestler meets Seabiscuit. And I'm saying that mostly for the director and producer, because anytime some corny stuff would come up, I'd be like, are we making Seabiscuit or are we making something better?
I hope it's not Nacho Libre meets Gus.
Meets Gus. Yeah. So I won Best Actor at Sundance for Jockey.
Oh, wow.
And then I'm getting ready to start my film festival tour for Jockey. So I
was supposed to be in Toronto for TIFF.
I'm going.
Is it happening?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Okay, so it's happening, but the movie I was doing, they pulled because they were like, Paramount was like, no, we want it because of COVID, blah, blah, blah. We're going to release it next year. And I'm like, damn it.
Oh, wow. That would have been fun to hang out.
Yeah, I was excited because I was like, finally.
I'm sure it'll be toned down quite a bit. Yeah, there we go.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That looks, wow. See, that's what I mean. You can literally transform into somebody who looks nothing like you.
This one's going to trip you out. This one I spent all my days with the jockeys. Like I literally.
Are you too tall to be a jockey too?
Wait till you see the movie. Yeah. But when you have forced perspective, those kind of things. And it was cool to be shot on a live track. And I was always in my jockey uniform. So I wanted the jockeys to kind of forget that I was an actor.
Right.
So after 3-4 days, because there was a couple that slowly started to realize, because we had a crew of 10. We didn't have a first AD. We had no trailers. We didn't have a scripty. We didn't have, and we had a crew of 10. So it was easy for me to maneuver. I told the jocks, whatever you need, I'd pick up horse shit, I'd help with the horses, hold your reins, do all this stuff. I just wanted to be in the world and get soaked up into it so I could become that character.
I have a friend who is not a jockey. He's the guy that gets the horses to the gate and gets them ready for the jockeys to mount. Ayo. And he was telling me about this one guy who was first day on the job and he just got pulled by the horse because he didn't open the gate right, and this horse just plowed him.
That's the most dangerous spot.
Is the
gate. I sat in the gate. You got some things that you can stand on if you can get off that horse fast enough, because it's very different than rodeo horses like on Westworld.
You were in Westworld?
Yeah, season 2 and 3.
Oh, the series, yeah. I'm thinking of the movie.
Yeah, not 1973 with Yul Brynner. Yeah, I was 3 years old. I look a little different.
Yeah.
I was shorter.
Yeah, you really grew.
Yeah, I was shorter. I was way shorter. So the horses on Westworld, they're really well-trained rodeo horses. So you can, they're like, it's like driving a Porsche. These horses are so maneuverable. And they tried to buck me a couple times, but I was good. Those quarter horses, man, I mean, you kind of hope to nudge them. They're like dragsters. They're the dragsters of the animal world.
Yeah.
You kind of just nudge them to the left and right. Whereas in rodeo horses, you go like this backwards, go like this, go like that. Not with these boys just want to run. They're waiting for that bell. And if that gate doesn't open and that bell goes, all of them are crashing to that
thing. Yeah, they're the Talladega Nights horses.
Yeah. They're fast as sin, like 40, 43 miles an hour.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's fast. No good. I don't like riding horses. I did it once and I have balls, and they really get whacked on those things.
You got to kind of position them, and you got to know how.
You got to lift them.
You got to lift, but also you got to know how to ride, because when you get into that lope, then you kind of lift off that saddle a little bit.
Yeah.
And on these, you don't even have a saddle. It's like a little thong.
So
like,
you didn't have a stunt?
We didn't have no money for stuntmen.
So it was you?
Yeah.
It's all you?
It's absolutely me. Yeah, we.
That's crazy.
Yeah, well, there's a.
Did you get hurt at all?
I did not. No, not once.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Emotionally, I hurt.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
But it's a painful movie, so I had to go through those things.
Yeah, your bank account got hurt a little. They were good to you? They were good to you.
Well, we had, we shot the movie for like 300 grand.
No.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Hey, your bank account got hurt.
Yeah, we stayed at like the Courtyard Marriott.
Sounds like me on the road right now.
I drove myself, but it is creative fulfillment.
Yeah,
it was one of the most.
It's one of those things, you got to do it if you really want to do this. Like the project, I really love the project. Okay, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make this project happen.
I had an agent call me. He's like, "Clivy, I got a great script for you. You got to read it." I'm like, "I'm working on an indie where we got no money. All we got is what we put into it, our hearts and soul, and the time that I commit and dedicate. Like, I can't read a script right now. I told you that when I started this.
Yeah,
but just please, this is a great director. I'm like, I love this person. I know her well." I was like, this isn't the time. Like, you're literally stealing from our budget when we do this. I said, "Look, do you call me one more time? I'm going to call block you."
Yeah.
Sure enough, he called me again. Like, "Livy," I'm like, "Okay, go ahead, talk. Okay, I just want to see, maybe it's something important. Maybe it's somebody huge. I don't know." Yeah. And he does. "Okay, cool. You're blocked." Click, hung up on him, blocked his ass, blocked the agency. I called my producer. I said, "Hey, you're going to have a crazed agent calling you. Don't relay nothing to me. I don't care what message it is. And I don't care if my house burnt down. If it did, tell me when we wrap, because I need the time to stay focused."
And are you one of those guys who stays right in character the entire time?
I was living and hanging with the jockeys a bunch, so it was easier, and I only spoke to 3 people while I was there, and all my homies know when I'm going deep, they know.
Yeah. It's like being an undercover cop, almost.
Yeah, and a lot of ways. I spoke to my grandmother, Sam Jackson, and Slash. Those are the 3 people, and that was it.
Those are pretty good names to have as the people you're talking to.
Yeah. It was Samuel's very much a mentor, and I've got a mentor
relationship. I've never met Samuel Jackson. Obviously, I love Samuel Jackson. I never met Abuelita, but she's, you know, I would love to meet Abuelita.
Oh, a lot of people knew Abuelita. A lot of people, yeah.
And Slash I met once, and it was really cool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm, you know, it's fucking Slash. And we were doing George Lopez show together. And I think I was promoting my new special at the time.
Oh, he was promoting his solo album.
This was like 10 years ago, 10 or 11 years
ago. Yeah, he was probably promoting his solo album with Miles Kennedy.
Yeah, so I was in the green room and he was in the green room. I go, oh, hey, Slash, my name's Russell Peters. I'm a comedian. I'm on the show with you tonight. He goes like this. Yeah, man, I know who you are. And I go, you do? He goes, yeah, we were just watching you on the tour bus in Europe. You're really funny. Because, you know, he's just really, like, matter of fact about it. And I'm like, you were? You do? I go, I got my new DVD. Do you want it? Yeah, man, sure. I came with DVD. He goes, thanks, man. I'm like, wait, Slash knows who the fuck I am.
Wait, wasn't that when also when Justin Bieber was on?
No.
Okay.
No, it was me. It was me, Slash, Sheila E.
Oh, wow.
And I was DJing with the band that night.
Oh, wow.
Was Paul Stanley? No, Paul Stanley wasn't on that one. Paul Stanley was a different one. Yeah, but this was the night. This day was me, Slash, Sheila E., and we were playing with the band. So Sheila was playing percussion and Slash playing guitar, and I was cutting and scratching because I've been DJing since 1985.
Oh, yeah. Real records.
Yeah. Oh, 1985, I started DJing. That's why I'm friends with all these rapid snappers.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, I miss those days. Oh, uh-huh. Real records. Shit.
Yeah. People, I mean, I still go digital now just because it's easier, but you're still doing the exact same work. You're not, there's no faking it. You still have to know what you're doing. You still have to know how to scratch.
Okay.
But it's not going to scratch for you.
Except for the digging in the crate part.
Right.
But you're not physically digging anymore. Also, you're still digging, just not a physical dig.
Right, but also dropping the needle on the right part of the record. Too, right, don't forget. You don't do that with the CD.
Well, no, it's still vinyl.
Oh, okay.
But you have cue points now.
Okay, I didn't know
that. So you can mark it. Like, it'll be like... you know, you want to get, like, say if I play a UTFO record, I'm playing Roxanne, and I just want to get to his verse, I would have to cue it myself, but I would listen to it and then put a cue point right there. Then I hit a trigger and it'll hit at that point. So I could be like, bap, you know, just right to his verse or whatever it is.
Either the techniques and the Newmark mixers.
No. Well, I was on 12, the turntables right up until a few months ago. And I got these new turntables that are needleless. But there's still a vinyl record on it, and it plays exactly the same as a turntable.
Wow.
All the same things you have to do. It just, you don't have to worry about your needle running out on you.
Does it play 78s?
You can hit 78. You'll hit 33 and 45 together.
I wonder how a 78 sounds on it.
It sounds like you're playing something at 78.
Well, no, a real 78 record, though.
Oh, no, you can't actually put a record on these.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because there's no needle.
Okay, I was going to say,
I still have my turntables just in case. You know?
Okay. I thought there was something. I got one of my old grandpa's 78s.
Oh, really?
He was performing. I think he was 22.
Yeah, those were big, heavy, thick records,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they break. They break because they're made out of like clay or something.
Acetate.
Or, is that what it is?
It was acetate, yeah.
Because they'll break.
Yeah, they're very thick and brittle.
Yeah, that's when, Sam friggin' made that happen, man. Sam made that happen.
Yeah, Sam's good friends with Sed and DL and George and all them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know a lot of people around Sam, but I've never actually met Sam.
Oh, man, he's got a photographic memory. He says he doesn't, but he remembers every line from every movie.
Yeah, see, I forget anything. Once I shot it, I'm like, man, it's gone out of my head. Yeah.
Now, with the credits I have, I can remember some monologues. But I can't remember, not all of them. Like, sometimes some people come up and start, like, yelling at me.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck, man? Because that's your character. Da, da, da. I'm like, oh, sorry.
I have people quote my old act, and I don't remember it. And they'll say that, and I go, that's pretty funny. Who said that? They go, you, motherfucker, you. I'm like, oh, shit, okay, my fault. What's your favorite movie that you did?
My favorite?
You have one?
I
hold on. Kangol, your ride's here.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been waiting for it all along. All day.
I wish.
Hold on, let's let that pass. That's the beauty of shooting in your own backyard. You helicopters, airplanes, and sirens.
It's life.
Life in the hood.
Life in the hood.
Yeah, that's why Russ goes through this.
That's right.
Hood adjacent.
Yeah, he can't leave the hood no matter
I'm
what.
I'm centrally south, but I'm not south central.
Centrally south. Oh, good old man. I remember getting shot at in Watts. I remember getting shot at in South Central. I've been shot at 3 times. I have avoided.
Who did you piss off?
They weren't aiming for me. I think they're aiming for my homies. And then they tried to carjack me 3 different times. Twice the same dude.
I was going to say, was it the same guys?
Once was in Culver City off of High Gear and Culver Boulevard. And the other one was off of Western in Venice. Those are the West.
And
the
minute you start going a little east, you know.
Yeah, but that was like, that's a big gap. Well, how would you get that? That's a big distance.
You were after Mid-City.
I don't know. They was trying to get my ride. And they didn't, thankfully.
What car was it?
That's when I was rolling a 5.0 convertible. Remember the old 5.0?
Yeah, the Mustangs?
Centerlock Epsilons. Mm-hmm. Diamond cut with gold bolts. Mm-hmm. And I got the gas cap gold plated, the cover gold plated, cloth top. I got the, we ordered a...
What year was the car?
It was a 92. And no, 91. And we
remember
got...
the 87 Mustang GT 5.0 was the one everybody wanted.
This is the one. Remember Menace to Society?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that forest green, I got it from the BMW. So we ordered the paint from Germany. I bought this car. I paid for it in cash. We stripped it in my buddy's backyard, and we painted it that forest green. So I was rocking the forest green like 2 years before Menace to Society.
Mm-hmm. So in all fairness, you can't blame them then for trying.
I knew.
It's like a girl with her tits out going, what are you staring at? Well, you put them out.
Hey, I have my heater too. But yeah, when they tried to jack me in the Playboy's hood, the cops had taken my 92 FS like 2 weeks before. So when you, that's just you, the one time you're slipping, right?
You when you're slipping. That's what they say.
2 weeks. And I wasn't even driving properly. And these fools rolled up on me, bam, blocked me in, and just, whoa.
Wow.
Having a pistol pulled on you offset is very different
than
on set.
Yeah, because, you know, hold on, this one might have real bullets in it.
This one does have real bullets. Yeah.
This guy might want to do,
how did you scave this?
They accused me of tapping some lady in the hood there, which I just denied up and down, but I was.
Mm-hmm. Now you got to.
And he was like, I'm going to jack you, fool, and this and that. And I thought, man, is this where my mama's going to find my fucking body right here?
Wow.
In this dirty-ass street on the floor, you know, right here bleeding out. Like, damn. And they kept singing and singing, and I said, look, man, y'all singing, so you got to do what you got to do, and I got to do what I got to do. I'm out. I put that shit in reverse, flipped it around. I called my homies in Watts. I said, yo, I need a little something. I had an issue.
Yeah.
And I just rolled out. And these fools chased me for a little bit. And I guess we can stop there.
Did they shoot at you at least?
No. Not at all. Not once.
Well, you got away. That's the good news.
Yeah, that wasn't one of the times that they shot at me. I got away. So I've lost at least 6 lives of my 9.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm blessed. So now. You now don't even try to get attention at all. I'm like glasses, hat. I love masks.
Yeah.
But what's creepy is when you call Postmates and you get the hat and the mask and like, dude, I love your work. I'm like, how in the fuck?
Yeah.
I've been there.
Yeah, because they see your name on the order.
Bill, I got an alias, Bill.
Hilarious.
It's always Bill. Yeah. So if we're ever out or like you've been talking to some honey dip or some shit, like, and she got a grenade there and I'm your wingman. Mm-hmm. If they don't recognize me. Like, oh, this is my buddy. If she's a grenade, I'll just be like, Bill, before they say Cliff. And then they know you got 5 minutes to get a number. We got to bounce. Don't tell them it's Cliff because I don't want them to know who I am. It's Bill. And that's what all my deliveries are, Bill.
Your hotel aliases, Russell? I got hotel aliases. I got Hugh Jorgen, Tyrone Shoelace. What was some of the other ones? Mike Hunt. I just want them to say it when they call my room. That's why.
Judd Nelson gave me that one. Judd Nelson gave me a list of aliases, and that was one of them.
Yeah. I remember when Chappelle was shooting that movie. I think it was Screwed, with Norm MacDonald, shooting it in Vancouver. Norm MacDonald, Dave Chappelle movie, like 1997 or 98 or something. Yeah, Screwed. Yeah, when he was shooting that movie, Screwed, he was like, yo, come to Vancouver and hang out. And I go, all right. He goes, you call me at the hotel, but ask for Mr. Bigglesworth. And he was Mr. Bigglesworth in the hotel there. So
I love it. Yeah, I usually don't need aliases, but when they deliver stuff at the house, I got to have aliases. And usually somebody else collects my food. Because I don't want to.
You're very fancy.
No, just because I don't want to, you know, it's like I'm on the, I got a gate and stuff, but, you know, I'm Mexican. I know how to get over a gate.
You speak Spanish?
Yeah, I speak Spanish.
Look at you.
Yeah.
I understand it because of all the fucking Eddies.
Because you live in L.A.?
No, because fucking Eddie and then the baby
Los
mamas.
Angeles. Half the names in this state.
Half, all of them.
Almost all of them, yeah.
Yeah, there's not one except for Sherman Oaks. That's the only one that they didn't name.
You're right. I can't even spin that one.
Studio City they didn't name.
El Studio City. La Ciudad de Estudio.
So Woodland Hills. No, none of that.
Woodland Hills.
But Calabasas. I didn't know that meant pumpkin.
Calabasas.
Yeah.
Calabasas. If you say it like that. Yeah, Los Angeles. Calabasas. San Diego. Santa Monica Lewinsky Boulevard.
Yeah, yeah. I used to call it Sepulveda when I first moved in there. I didn't know how to say it. It's like Sepulveda. That's a stupid fucking name.
Cahuenga.
Yeah, Cahuenga.
Which is named after a general.
General Cahuenga?
Yep. There was a big battle. There was a giant fight with General Cahuenga. Look that shit up.
And Cesar Chavez Boulevard.
Yeah.
I thought it was, when I first moved here, I thought it was named after Julio Cesar Chavez, the boxer.
Oh, the boxer.
Because I didn't know who Cesar Chavez was.
Okay.
Because I grew up in Canada. You know,
I get it.
First of all, we don't have Mexicans.
That's right. There's some Mexicans there. A lot of Asians.
Yeah, a lot of Indians, Asians, black people, but there's no Mexicans. Oh, what the fuck is the dog doing right now? She is out of control.
So we got to check the volume on this. I'm getting some.
This bitch, you knocked over your Coke.
It's not. watch the kilos.
Yeah.
Dog's getting into kilos.
Yeah, we got a rogue pug out here. Piper, you lunatic. You know what it is? She's tired, and so when she's tired, she gets crazy. And she just wants somebody to fuck with her so she can go to sleep.
I look at her and see Men in Black.
I mean, if whatever, wherever you see yourself.
We're doing both.
Think that little dude.
No off switch.
No, none.